Baseball is back.
He doesn't want a super spreader out there in the middle of the field.
The season is different. On the field, in the socially distant clubhouse, in the empty stands.
You guys wanted to do it. You've been wanting to do it for months.
There's a lot to talk about.
Who are you kidding? Don't give me all that bull crap.
And this is the place to do it. This is the Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass.
Brought to you by Big Y, Safety Insurance, Rodenheiser Home Services, Woodbridge Wines, Gravely, Budweiser, and Jackson Lumber.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
How encouraging has it been for you, with what Tanner Houck's done and now you see Pivetta, to see some guys who could impact the team next year and give you some of these good starts?
Yeah, great to see, no doubt. You look forward to seeing some new guys come, and when you see them start this way, it's, no doubt you're looking at, next year and what can happen and the possibilities, and I know Haim and his crew we'll look at that and figure out where everybody fits in. But the more arms you have, it is vital to have depth in your starting staff because you know they're not going to make it through the season, not five guys. So I think really important and really important down the road. I mean, for the future, trying to get some guys, some younger guys, and hopefully we have them here for a long time.
Red Sox manager Ron Renicki, after last night's game against the Baltimore Orioles, Red Sox were winners. Nick Pivetta made his Red Sox debut, 5 innings, 1 run, struck out 8, walked 3. Red Sox win again. You want the good news or the bad news, Murray? Where do you want to start? Good news or bad news?
Always the bad first.
Okay, bad news, that draft pick the Red Sox are going to get at the high part of the draft, it's dropping every day because they're winning too many games. Like, only the Red Sox would have a completely forgettable season, screw it up to no end, ruin everybody's summer and not play one single meaningful baseball game and still be able to get something out of it, meaning a high draft pick, and screw it up. That's the bad news. They've now dipped to number 4 already in the draft order. Last night they were tied for 3rd. Now they're 4th. The Red Sox are in the draft position, and if they continue along this pace, I would tell you that that is a little problematic. Don't give away the high pick. The Red Sox need to lose some games here this week. Don't kid yourself. I think they're 8-7 in their last 15. Did you guys know that?
No.
8-7 in their last 15 games. Stop this right now. I'm not kidding. Stop.
Sounds about right for them.
What are you jackasses doing? Now you're at the point where you can actually tank and you can actually accomplish something and end up with one of the, two or three worst records of baseball. And now you're going for, you're going to end up with more wins and slide to what? 5-6 in the draft order? Don't be stupid. Holy crap. So that's number one. Here's the good news. They've actually been playing half decent lately. They've actually been playing half decent. And this to me is the real point. I'll ask Jimmy Stewart, our producer, if we could open up the phone lines right away. Because I do want to know what fans' perspective is on this particular part of it. And that is that what you're seeing from the Red Sox right now might be a little bit of a precursor of what you're going to see in 2021. And I've told you all along, I'm worried that next year could really suck. And I still have concerns about that, but I would also tell you in the same breath that the little bit that I've seen of Tanner Houck and of Nick Pivetta, they're not staff savers. Those aren't the guys that are going to be at the top of your rotation and match up with other aces and allow you to compete for a championship. They're not those kinds of guys. But I think they are big league pitchers, which is more than I can say for a lot of the bums the Red Sox have thrown out there in the early part of this season. So again, the Red Sox are 8-7 in their last 15 games. And as a fan, you know what that should do? And the instinct is to say that should give you hope. It really should make you kind of angry and annoyed. Here's why. The number 8 playoff spot in the American League currently belongs to the Toronto Blue Jays, who are 28-27. The Jays are 500. Do you remember early on in the year I said to you the team the Red Sox are going to have to compete with?
Yeah.
That their fate is ultimately going to be decided by how they do against the Blue Jays. Okay, now, and this is not an I told you so because I honestly couldn't even tell you what the head-to-head numbers are with the Blue Jays. But I thought that they were a comparable team to Toronto. I thought they were. I thought it was something like that.
Iffy pitching, good lineup.
Yeah. As it is, Toronto's 28-27. That's all it took. That's all it took. 500. A 500 record would have gotten you in the playoffs or at least close to it. Now, maybe you lose the games with Toronto. Maybe you don't finish quite 500. Maybe you go 28-32 and you miss the playoffs. I don't know. But it really did not take much in this season, in a short schedule with an expanded playoff system. It did not take much to get in and play meaningful baseball games.
So it's almost like the Toronto Blue Jays didn't have an underachieving player, say like old Bo Bichette or something like that, hit 199 for weeks on end because he just didn't feel like being there.
You're talking about J.D. Martinez, Murray?
Yes.
So that's one of them. Like, you look at that and say, wow, boy, the Red Sox quit early. They did. They quit early. And that should enrage you as a fan. Now, I know many people aren't watching these games, and I don't blame you. They buried themselves early, and that was it. That was the end of it. That, again, the way I'll say it is they did not really play a meaningful baseball game all year. All year. Which really kind of sucks. And so I look at it now and I say, it wouldn't have taken much. You really didn't need much to be able to pull that off. And part of me wonders whether they should have been able to do it anyway, and it took them too long to get their heads out of their asses and compete and win some games. So when I look at it and I tell you, okay, well, you know what? Last week, Tanner Houck made his major league debut against the Marlins. Houck has now pitched twice. You know what the Red Sox are in those two games? 2-0. Houck has allowed zero earned runs in those games. Zero. Nick Pivetta last night pitched in his first game. 5 innings against the Orioles. And Houck's first game, by the way, was against the Marlins. The Red Sox handpicked his opponent, just as they did for Pivetta last night. They chose Lambs for those guys to re-enter against. Rightfully so. Good management job by the Red Sox there. And I'm talking about player development, like, Let the kids hit the ground running. And Pivetta's not a kid, but the young guys, the relatively inexperienced guys, the guys who are going to be part of your operation next year one way or the other, as a number 4 or 5 starter, as a number 6 starter, as a number 3 starter. Who knows? But they're going to be in the mix somehow, somewhere. Pivetta jumps in. He wins. So he's 1-0, allowed 1 earned run, and you beat the Orioles. Martin Perez this year has made all 11 of his starts. Now, the Red Sox are just 3-8 in those games. But Perez leads the staff in innings, and his ERA, I believe, is 3.88. Martin Perez has been pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, and I should rephrase, he's been decent. Decent, as has Nathan Eovaldi. 3-2 with a 4.25 ERA. Again, representative big league numbers. Nothing to write home about, but what I would call average, serviceable big league pitching. That's what that is. So I just gave you those four guys. Eovaldi, Perez, Houck, and Pivetta. All four of those guys, in theory, could be part of your rotation next year. Perez is a free agent. But if the Red Sox wanted to bring him back, they could. I don't think there's going to be huge competition for Martin Perez. Those four guys, Murray. First of all, their combined one loss is? If you had to guess, those four guys. Houck, Pivetta, Perez, Eovaldi, 9-6. 9-6 with a 3.55 ERA, 116 innings. Not bad. Pretty good. That's actually pretty decent. They've averaged 8.3 strikeouts per 9 innings. They've walked 3.2 per 9. Good numbers. All across the board.
You're going to get to the rest of the arson squad?
Well, okay, so this is where the problem rests. Is that when you look at it and you say the Red Sox are now 21-34. So take away 11-11. That is 10-23 in the other games. Which, now look, I'm not trying to pump Chaim Bloom's tires. I'm just trying to tell you the reality of the dilemma they were in. They were so thin in pitching that they had to send bums like Chris Mazza, Ryan Weber, guys we've never heard of, to the lefty who was there early in the year. His name I can't even remember now. Matt something. Hall? Matt Hall?
Mel Hall.
Mel Hall. So the guys that you never even heard of that make Nick Pivetta and Nathan Eovaldi and Martin Perez and even Tanner Houck look like Cy Young caliber pitchers. It wouldn't have taken much to give us a season. So again, as a fan, that should really frustrate the hell out of you. One of the highest payrolls in baseball, a team that should be able to pump out talent in its minor league system, maybe not like the Dodgers do, but you should be able to pump out talent because you've always had the resources, and the Red Sox have always produced position players, even if they've never produced pitchers. And then just a representative pitching staff that could go 500, and you'd be talking about maybe being able to play a playoff series. That's what we'd be talking about right now. Instead, we're worried about where they're going to be in the draft order, which right now, again, is tied for third. They're still tied with Arizona. But I worry about them every time they win another game. And let me tell you, by the way, too, Hauk has another start this weekend. Pivetta does. And again, they're 3-0 in games started by those two guys. And sadly, I want them both to pitch. Unfortunately, it means they might win. So it is something to consider here as the week goes along. What I would do is start resting some of the positional players. Make sure you don't score. Bogaerts has shown you enough. Devers has shown you enough. Even Verdugo, I would say Vasquez, those guys, start resting them. Don't win too many games. Preserve that draft pick. Go get yourself a high pick and then see where you end up. But man, it would not have taken much. And if you are a fan and you look at that now, you look at where Toronto is, and we all theorize this, that it would take a 500 record or something close to it. You might even be able to get in with a losing record. That's what we thought. Maybe even a losing record. And I'll tell you what, let me look quickly in the National League, because I've been focused just on the American. But Toronto would be the last team at 28-27. Right now in the National League, the Giants are 27-27. They're in the hunt. The Reds are 28-28. They're in the hunt. The Phillies are under 500. They're in the hunt. I mean, all those teams right there, right around 500. That's all it would have taken. Oh, as a Red Sox follower, Red Sox fan, that should anger you. Because they really, they some of the guys on this team quit. They did. They quit. Chris is in Worcester. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, Tony. I was trying to think, and I had the worst take ever. But let me just go back to, right, what you said about management and how they built this team at the beginning of the season, where I thought 18 wins would be great. And I was trying to look it up right now, but my internet blows. So they're not even going to get to 18 wins, right? Or where?
No, they got 21. Close. Chris, they got 21 right now. They're 21-34.
I thought about 18, so I'm sorry. I was trying to look it up. But anyways, my point being is, yes, we might have something to go forward with pitching, but management next year, and I would not bring back, Alex Cora. I don't think it's a good look, and I just wanted to end on that. Thanks.
Okay, so we'll get to the manager later in the week. We still got a couple of days to go here. After tonight, only two more shows. And I do want to get to the manager status, and we'll touch on it just a little bit at the end of the program because Ron Renneke was asked about it tonight, and you may be interested in hearing what he said. But again, to me, where you start is with the last, call it week to 10 days. Hauk has pitched twice. Pivetta has pitched once. Perez is going to make every start. Perez is going to make all 12 starts this year. And that sounds funny when you say it that way because of the short season, but he's made 11 starts. The team is 3-8, but he has an ERA under 4. Martin Perez has been worth it. The Red Sox got their money's worth out of him. And to me, those three guys, Hauk, Pivetta, Perez, all have one thing in common that should give you some cause for optimism going forward with the Red Sox. And when I say going forward, I'm talking about long-term more than short, but maybe even in the short term, maybe even in 2021. Those three guys, Hauk, Pivetta, Perez, what do they have in common? I'll tell you what I think when we come back.
This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show. The Baseball Reporters on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Red Sox starting pitcher, Nick Pivetta, his Red Sox debut.
I tell you what, this could be a big prize for the Red Sox if they can get this kid figured out. You know, mid-90s fastball, great curveball. We'll see what we got tonight.
Trying to put away Mullins. And he does. He drops in a beauty to Fannin, one away.
A little Sly Johnson inside corner, pair of shoes.
And now the 1-2 to Severino. And strikes him out. Side retired, but a run in. Got him to chase. Pitch into the dirt to strike him out. And he has fanned three. And in the- there for strike three. Made a good pitch right at the knee. Ruiz gave up on that. That's three consecutive strikeouts for Pivetta here. Tried to get him to go, and he offered at it for strike three, so he strikes out four consecutive batters. Nunez chases one up and out of the zone, and down he goes on strikes. One man is left.
Oh,
that is in
yes.
there. Caught
gave
him looking. Strike three. His fan seven.
Yeah, came all the way back 3-0. Stewart doesn't like it. He thought that ball's inside, but he painted him. Get the corner. Gotta have it.
Would help Pivetta immensely.
There's that high fastball.
Swing and a miss, and he puts him away. That's strikeout number eight.
Oh, beautiful thing. He took a better spot for it right there.
Little summary of Nick Pivetta's night against the Baltimore Orioles. And I'll admit it, I didn't watch the whole thing either. Okay, I don't expect that you did as a fan, but I'll tell you, in the bits that I saw, I feel similarly about Pivetta as I do Tanner Houck. And that is not to say that I feel great. But I look at him and say, well, he's got stuff that can play in the big leagues. There's no question about that. And with Pivetta, most people already knew that. Maybe we didn't here in Boston because you don't follow the Philadelphia Phillies. And it's different than Houck. Houck, to me, has tremendous movement. And Pivetta, to me, has got a sweeping breaking ball. His curveball wasn't good last night. Apparently, that's his best pitch, but we need to watch him over a longer period of time. But there's a velocity there and a slider. And he threw a couple of pitches last night. That there was one slider in the first inning that was nasty, that hit the outside part of the plate on the first base side, which is Pivetta's glove side. And also there was a fastball later in the game that he threw to a left-handed batter that clipped the inside corner. I thought was an excellent pitch. So instinctively, I look at him and I say, I already feel like he's better on one side of the plate than the other. Because when he went to that first base side, again, his glove side, he's a right-hander, it felt to me like he had better command. On the other side of the plate, not so much. Houck, to me, almost feels the opposite. Like that. You know, but I need to watch more. It's a little too early to make that judgment. But here's the point. If those two guys had been starting games for the Red Sox early in the year, instead of Chris Mazza, Matt Hall, let me see some of the other names that were on this list for the Red Sox early in the year. Could you remember the collection of clowns they put out
There's
to the
so
mound?
Many. I forget some of the names.
So
here.
Again, I'm just going to rattle them off because I called up the roster in front of me right now. I think, did Austin Bryce start a game? I think he started a game at one point. Okay, Austin Bryce.
Zach Godley.
Right. Well, so Godley, again, has been in the big leagues. But Kyle Hart. Who the F is Kyle Hart? Can someone tell me that? Andrew Triggs.
Yeah.
Like, the collection of bums that the Red Sox put out on the mound, you would say these guys have no right being in the big leagues.
Mike Kickham.
I mean, kick him's another one, Murray. Perfect. Right? Kick him right out of the big leagues is where you want to kick him. So, but if it had been Pivetta and Houck, and they had been able to give five decent innings, you might have gone 500 and been able to play in the playoffs. Now you'd lose. You wouldn't win it. You're not as good as those teams out there. And there's the iron of baseball is still who everybody thought it was, the Dodgers most notably. But the Yankees have played better of late. You don't need me to go over it for you. This was not a championship season. It should not have been what it was either. That's really the lesson. It should not have been what it was. And Houck, Pivetta, and Perez do, I think, speak to one thing in the organization, which I'll get to in just a moment. But Andrew is in Linfield. Let's go to him first. What do you got, Andrew?
Hey, Tony. I'm a 24-year-old young baseball fan, a little bit of an anomaly, I know, but I've been wasting my time watching the Red Sox all summer. I want you to talk about second base. I don't like Chavis. I think he's a bum. Who I do like, Rose seems interesting in like a utility role, and Jairo Munoz has really impressed me this year. So I want to know what you think about that, as well as I really wish the Red Sox traded JBJ instead of Kevin Pillar. I think they do the same thing. Pillar's going to be cheaper. I think he hits better. So I would just love to hear your feedback on that.
Okay, so Andrew, I think if you wanted to, Kevin Pillar will be a free agent again after the season. It was a one-year deal. In theory, you could bring him back. Same with Bradley. He'll be a free agent at the end of the year. I was reading something by Peter Gammons today where the Red Sox have some interest in bringing Bradley back. Honestly, I don't know why. I don't think they need to bring Bradley back unless they can get him on some kind of song, team-friendly deal. But my guess is that Bradley's going to move on. He sounds like a guy that's had it with Boston, and I can't say I blame him. So in a lot of ways, you make the clean break there and move on, but they could have gotten something from Bradley at the deadline. As for second base, look, that's one that's kind of up in the air, and they've thrown a lot of different guys at that spot this year. Arroyo was a former first-round pick with the Giants who played both of them there. My guess is you're going to get a similar approach this offseason, and maybe a guy like Arroyo comes into camp next year and he competes for the job. It may be a spot where there's no clear answer. I agree with you on Chavis. I don't think Chavis is it. Do you see the balls he missed in left field last night? Did either of you guys see that? Holy crap. Wow.
I like that he was trying to tank the game. I appreciate that.
Okay, so if that's the case, then I give him a tip of the hat, Jimmy. He's ahead of us on that one. But for a guy who's at the stage of the career that he is at, and the Red Sox trying to find a spot to get his bat in the lineup, it doesn't get much easier than left field at Fenway Park. Except if a ball is hit to you, and you reach up and miss it, I mean flat out miss it.
That just means you got bad depth perception is all.
So I don't know if you can play in the big leagues at all. Now, Bobby Dalbec, I feel a little bit differently about than Chavis, and they're similar players. Maybe it's just because it's earlier in Bobby Dalbec's development, so I'm willing to cut him a little bit of slack. Chavis looks to me like you've got nothing there. Now, look, long-term, the answer at second base is probably Jeter Downs, who they got in the Dodgers deal. And so I don't know whether he'll be ready next year or not. I think Downs made it up to Double-A last year. Obviously, there was no minor league season this year. He was one of the guys in the extended camp, so the Red Sox did get a look at him, and he got some reps, but he needs more game reps. But I wouldn't rule out him being here by the end of next year. I don't think that's out of play. Jim's in a truck on Tanner Houck. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, what's going on? Do you think Tanner Houck is going to be a pretty good pitcher next year, or do you think this is like a two-game fluke? Or what's your thoughts and opinions on him?
Okay, so Jim, on Houck, here's what I would tell you. That do I think he has the stuff to pitch in the big leagues? Yes. Do I think he's a guy you can plug into your rotation right now and expect, let's call it, just to make it easy, a dozen wins and 160 innings? I don't know. Feels like a little much. So is he a guy that you could put in the 4 or 5 spot in your rotation? Send him out there every 5 or 6 days? Skip him every now and then? Try to get yourself 140 innings? See if he can make 20, 25 starts and maybe get to, you know, 8 or 9 wins, go 8 and 7? Maybe. Yeah, I think he has that kind of stuff. I would say the same. Pavetta's expectations or ceiling, I think, right now is a little higher. He has a little bit of big league experience. He's a little older than Tanner Houck, so he's a little farther along, and I think the Red Sox are going to put more on his plate. He's got a couple of years in the big leagues already. Houck doesn't. But do I think that the Red Sox, in theory, could send guys out to the mound that'll keep them in the game better than they did this year? Yeah. Yeah, I do. So am I predicting a playoff team next year? No. I mean, I'm not ruling it out, but I'm not telling you they're going to win 92 games. Now, look, there's an entire offseason to come. There's a lot to be sorted out yet. But do I feel better about their options at the end of the rotation than I did this year going in? Yes, I do. Now, the top end is still a major concern. And you're not going to become a championship-caliber team until you get a Chris Sale-caliber pitcher back or an Eduardo Rodriguez-caliber pitcher back, and they're healthy and performing at their highest level. And I don't necessarily mean just those two guys. I mean anybody like them, which the Red Sox are going to have to figure out, because to get to that championship level, you're going to need front-end pitching. There's no two ways around that, and we all know it. But in the short term, look, again, I told you, if they had gone .500 this year, we'd have had a baseball season. We would have had games to watch, plays to talk about, managerial decisions to dissect. All of that stuff would have been there, at least enough. This year, we got zero. So next year, I think they are capable of giving us that. I do, especially after seeing these guys pitch. And again, I said I think all those guys in particular, Houck, Pavetta, and Perez, have something in common, which I've still neglected to get to, but I promise you I will do when we come back right after Murray gets you caught up on headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Get right back to your calls here in one moment. I told you, if you look at the recent pitching by the Red Sox, Hauk, Pivetta, Martin Perez, something all in common there. And look, I'm not turning over, you know, digging deep into the ground here and identifying things you've never seen before. But these are all effectively what I would call high and bloom guys. So Hauk was drafted before Bloom got here, but he was in minor league camp. The Red Sox were careful about how they were bringing him along. And I do think that the greatest thing that Bloom can offer the Red Sox is by developing their young pitching and identifying how they can use these guys in the big leagues. And it made a difference here at the end of the season because, again, in the games pitched by Hauk and Pivetta, the Red Sox are 3-0. Now, granted, Marlins and Orioles on that list. Hauk's other start was against the Yankees. Perez, the Red Sox are just 3-8 in his outings, but he's pitched well. The ERA is 3.88. And I would argue that some of those losses came early in the year when the Red Sox weren't hitting and people like J.D. Martinez flat out quit. And then they're 5-3 when Nathan Eovaldi pitches. So you add all that up, and they're 11-11 behind those four guys. Now, 11-11 is no great shakes. But in a COVID season with a 60-game schedule, it would have gotten you into the playoffs. And I think that it is going to be incumbent upon the Red Sox to have representative outings from some of those guys. So if you remember, when the Red Sox acquired Nathan Eovaldi from the Rays a couple of years ago in the World Series year in 2018, Jimmy, do you remember who they gave up? You said the name the other day. I want to see if you remember.
Chris Archer.
Nope, close. No. The Red Sox, when they traded for Eovaldi, they gave up Jalen Beeks.
Who's undergoing Tommy John?
Okay, no. So, but here's my point. When Jalen Beeks pitched here, were you impressed?
No, not at all.
Did he show you anything at all?
Just a guy.
Okay. With the Red Sox in 2018, Jalen Beeks went 5-1, but the ERA was 5.51. Since he has been with Tampa Bay, his ERA is 4.23. He has struck out 8 batters per 9 innings. He's 12-4 overall. But the point is this. They made him into a representative big league pitcher on some level. Maybe he's a middle reliever. Maybe he's a guy they match up with lefties. He hasn't started a ton of games. But he's still in the big leagues. He's still on the roster. He's still getting people out, relatively speaking. And I'm not telling you I want Jalen Beeks on my staff if I'm going to win a World Series. But while I'm trying to rebuild it, and when I have a lineup that I think is pretty good, can I go 86-76 with a bunch of Jalen Beeks on my staff? Maybe. And so my point is this. I think this is really where Tampa Bay has excelled. And identifying guys who have some talent, and Beeks, honestly, I think has less than Hauk, Pivetta, Perez, or Eovaldi. I would say all of those guys have more talent than Jalen Beeks. And so I think that Chaim Bloom has a chance to, whether it be through the development of these pitchers, implementation, whatever it is, because it feels to me like he is very methodical about bringing these guys along, which I think is a good thing. Again, in the case of Hauk, the Red Sox waited. They brought him along slowly, and I'm talking about under Bloom now, because they were yanking him all over the place before Bloom got here. They waited, they were deliberate, and then when they brought him to the big leagues, they pitched him against the Marlins, who suck against right-handed pitching. So it was all designed to make sure that the kid succeeded. And developmentally, I think that that's important. Now, the great pitchers, the guys who become your John Lesters, they have a competitive streak and an ability early on that allows you to push them a little harder. But the borderline guys, you got to pick your spots with them and make sure you protect them because they're brittle. They're not as confident. They're not as developed. They're not as good. So that's what they did with Hauk. With Pivetta, they picked the Orioles. Now, there were ulterior motives there. They wanted to resist bringing him up too early so they didn't start the clock on his service time and therefore make him eligible for free agency earlier than not. Pivetta would have been eligible for free agency at the end of 2023 had the Red Sox brought him up right after the trade. They waited. Now they can keep him through the end of 2024. So they'll get four full seasons out of him, which is good. But again, they picked their spots. They were deliberate. And Martin Perez was a guy in the free agent market that wasn't super expensive, but the Red Sox said, no, we think we can bring him in. Bloom said we can bring him in and get something out of this guy. 3.88 ERA. And again, no great shakes. 11 starts, 58 innings. So he's going five innings a start. He's getting you maybe five and a third. But for the money, that's not bad. Not horrible. So again, do I expect them to beat the Yankees? No, you're going to get your ass kicked when you play New York, probably next year again. And you'll get your ass kicked when you play the elite teams in the league. You play the Astros, you're going to get your ass kicked. But what about everybody else? Can you beat everybody else, play well enough against everyone else, where you become more like the Rays and actually make the playoffs and then lose, but make the playoffs and actually have a season where things are positive, things are good, things are competitive, and people like J.D. Martinez don't quit? Don't let him off the hook for that, by the way. That's horrible to do what J.D. Martinez did. He flat out quit. And the development of that pitching talent is going to be critical in the next year or so while the Red Sox are trying to put this thing back together to a championship level. It's going to be critical in convincing guys like Xander Bogaerts that staying in Boston is an option. Very, very important thing, how they develop that pitching and how they bring it along, not to mention the fact that they will have a high pick in next year's draft. Steve is in Portland. Go ahead, Steve. What do you got?
Hey, Maz, by them winning the past couple of games, do you think they even care about the draft position? Kind of like with the Patriots. And the reason why I ask that is because the guy they drafted last year, wasn't he pegged for like the third round? They didn't have to pay him as much money. Do you know what I'm saying?
Okay, so yeah, they drafted a couple of guys in this draft, Steve. That one in particular, and I don't have the draft in front of me, and I'm not a minor league draft guru, but they did draft a guy who was projected a little bit lower in the draft, and then they took a guy higher in a later round. They didn't have a second round pick because they lost it as a penalty for their cheating, if you remember that.
Yeah, but do you think they care what position they draft at all? I mean, they won the past two games, so obviously they're not trying to tank for that second position, I guess, because the first one's wrapped up.
Okay, so they weren't going to get the first one anyway. They have an outside shot at the second, and I still think they have it, although I still think they have a chance. I'll tell you what, let me call up the standings again just to double check. But when you say, do they care about where they draft? My answer is yes. Yes. They still have an outside shot at the second pick, but they're probably not going to get that one either. Okay, so really they're in contention for number 3, 4, 5, 6. They're going to fall somewhere in that area. And I don't expect that they will completely go out and literally tank. Like, tell guys not to pitch. They need to get Pivetta on the mound. They need to get Houck on the mound because there are no minor league games this year. If they had minor league games, they could tank. I think it's important for those guys to pitch. I do. Does Martin Perez need to pitch? I don't think so. I don't know what they'll do there. Maybe they'll change their mind a little bit and pull the plug on some of those guys. And again, I'm trying to call up what their scheduled rotation is for the rest of the week. And forgive me for not knowing all these. Nathan Eovaldi goes tonight. Tomorrow is Martin Perez. Friday is Chris Mazza. So hopefully you'll lose that one. And then over the weekend is Houck and Pivetta. So you're going to have four decent guys go in the last five games. Would I like to see them pull the plug maybe on Eovaldi and Perez? Sure. Yes, although there's no indication, right, Murray, from Fenway tonight that Eovaldi's not going to pitch?
No.
So he's going to pitch tonight. But could they pull the plug on Perez? Sure. I mean, it wouldn't kill me if they did that. I'd like to see them do that, too. Worst case, they're still going to come out with a higher draft pick than any other point since 1967. They have picked no higher than seventh in the draft in 42 years or whatever that is. 52 years. Am I an idiot? 52. So they're going to come out with a really high pick. And from what I understand, most people think the first and second picks will be the two kids from Vanderbilt, Rocker and Al Leiter's son. But the next several picks could be any one of a range of guys. And I'm sure the Red Sox look at it like a lot of draft people do and say, well, 3 through 8 are the same caliber of player in different spots. We'll take any one of them. I mean, oftentimes that's how they do it. If you don't have one or two, you're going to end up with one of those spots. Adam's in Woonsocket. Go ahead, Adam. What do you got?
How are you doing, Tony? You mentioned J.D. Martinez. We all know that J.D. is a big proponent of using the iPad after his at-bats to get an idea of what, you know, how the pitcher's pitching him. How much is that? Now, I'm playing devil's advocate here, but how much does that play into his year this year? We all know that he was gutless and he gave up, but, you know, a lot of hitters are relying on that kind of technology. He can opt out this year. I don't necessarily want him back, but he's a big bat in the lineup if he can never get his head straight.
Yeah, so Adam, look, I think Martinez can hit. I mean, I'd be the first to tell you. As much as Murray and Felger bust my balls here and tell me you got to get a crowbar for me to admit that a take was wrong. Murray, have I ever said that J.D. Martinez, in retrospect, was a wrong choice over Giancarlo Stanton? Or did I admit that mistake a long time ago?
You admitted that pretty much during the run in 2018.
Okay, that was – so Martinez can hit. Now, if you were to say to me, what, how much of a percentage of it do I put on the iPad? I put zero. Zero. I don't think they should allow those things in the dugout at all. Why is it you're allowed to use video in the middle of the game? Why is that allowed? To me, that's sort of the whole point of playing. You go up in the batter's box, the pitcher attacks you, and you have to make the decisions and the judgments in real time with your eyes while the game is going on. Now, the people who counter with football's a little different. You know, 22 guys on the field. It's hard to process everything that's going on all at the same time. Baseball is one-on-one. Can basketball guys take out iPads and go over video during the game? Can they do that? Jimmy Stewart, do they allow that in the NBA? I don't think they do.
They do not.
Do they allow video on the bench in hockey?
No.
I think for replays they do.
For replays they do, but not
challenges,
for
challenges, yeah.
Okay, but not for analysis.
No.
So this is my point.
Unless you cheat.
Why does J.D. Martinez need it at all? I think, and the other thing is, I think it's bullcrap. I think it's a crutch for him.
He's stealing signs.
So I don't know what the hell he's doing, but he shouldn't be able to use it. That's what I think. The guy can hit. He can hit. So the iPad thing, he doesn't get to use that as an excuse. And I'll tell you what. Let's say the iPad is 5%. Does that explain him turning from a 300 hitter with a 950 OPS or a 900 OPS somewhere in that range into a guy who's hitting 200? No. Because you know what explains that? He quit. He quit. He checked out a long time ago. So I told you, one of the things that we would learn during this season was who were the real pros on the Red Sox? Who are the guys that you were going to be able to look at year's end and say, wow, those were tough circumstances. It was in the middle of a pandemic. The players almost didn't want to play at all. Then they had to show up and commit, even after they got a deal that they didn't want. And then on top of it, they had to play for the Red Sox with no pitching, crap season, crap team, no fans in the stands, all of it. Who was actually going to try? Who was going to have the character and the makeup and the mental fortitude to try? And we found out. Bogarts, Vasquez, Devers, Verdugo, Martin Perez and Eovaldi, J.D. Martinez, quit. He quit, flat out, plain and simple. He's not going to opt out, not after this year. You think he's going to get that money on the market after this year? After everybody saw what kind of quitter he is? No chance.
This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show. The Baseball Reporters on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.